IDC Radio.
What is up, guys? My name is Eliezer Lev. I'm here in the IDC International Radio Station with my good friends Ezra Snuckle.
Hey, guys.
Mendel Zlotnik.
What's going on?
And a very special guest that we will introduce in just a bit. Now, you have tuned into Real Life. Now, that is R-E-E-L Life, because in this podcast, we'll be talking about TV, movies, all that stuff, because it's what we love. It's what we want to inform you about. And, you know, it's important. It's important to everyone.
I think it's important to pretty much everyone on the planet. Everyone
fundamental. Loves
movies. It's fundamental. Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, for this special week, we will be reviewing and kind of breaking down the importance of the new movie Spider-Man No Way Home. Now, what? To do this special episode, we decided to bring on a special guest, Mr. Hever Schulberg, professor at,
hello.
At the IDC, the Reichman University, sorry.
The RRIS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hever, do you want to introduce yourself a little bit?
First of all, hello, Eliezer. I'm trying to use my radio graphic song. I am a professor here at Reichman University, previously known as
the IDC.
IDC.
Yeah.
AKA, I think, still.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like most people would know what IDC is more than Reichman University.
You just have to say both names. Yeah. You have to say them consecutively. And I have been teaching math and statistics and other quantitatively oriented subjects in the last 2 decades already.
Wow.
That sound make me sound old, right?
You don't look it, though. You don't look it. You don't look at the over 30.
One out of two.
Just for some reference, this guy's our math professor. Yeah.
Math and stats.
Just a little bit of a connection to why he's coming on a Spider-Man episode is one day in class, we were just having a regular discussion, and he made a very accurate pop culture reference to, I think it was Iron Man?
No, it was Spider-Man himself.
Spider-Man?
He said, with great power comes great responsibility. And Eliezer threw up his hands, was like, what? Did my math professor just say?
It made me believe again.
Yeah, very, very accurate. But no, definitely, because we think that, oh, this is stuff for kids. This is stuff for a younger generation.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone loves this stuff, whether it's the comics, the movies, or just the overall storyline. The MCU has definitely brought an element of surprise to all of us, an element of entertainment
and
as well.
And dreams as well.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah.
Okay, so what we're going to try and do for this episode is take a couple points of, like a couple topics of conversation and sort of break them down and get into the nitty-gritty of it. So I'll start with you, Hever.
Yes.
What do you think was the funniest moment or your favorite comedy moment of the movie?
There are a few, but I think my favorite, maybe because it was also in the trailer, is the funny, not serious sometimes moment they, I think, deliberately planted in order to downsize maybe the bit of seriousness of the movie and the grim side of it. And this is when Doc Ock introduced himself and they all laugh about his name. This is something that I actually wanted to do in every movie or every time I saw the actual movie. Doc Ock, really? And they actually doing it. I mean, someone thought the same way I did and actually brought it to screen, and it even went through editing, and someone even decided to leave it in the film. You know?
Yeah.
They probably took a bunch of those. If you know how movies are done, they're taking a lot of gag rules and things, and some of them end up and some of them don't eventually. So I was glad it did.
Yeah, no, it's one thing to have a funny gag rule and the characters are trying to be funny, or the director or the screenwriter is just trying to add a bit of humor. But when the humor resonates with the audience, meaning exactly like you said, it's something that we would think ourselves, then we're like, aha, how did they know? I was just thinking that yesterday.
Yeah. This is immediately connecting you as a viewer to the movie. I mean, it's that this you're already captured.
Right.
Now you're going to listen differently to everything else.
100%. Because I think that you see a lot of these days, what people look for in superhero movies or movies that follow generally a comic storyline or a pre-determined storyline, which obviously you find a lot with superheroes, is that you look at the action sequences, you look at how the director has depicted the characters in their fight sequences and their dialogues and everything. But another thing is that there's also view expectation. And the view expectation going into a lot of these Marvel movies just keeps on getting higher and higher and higher.
Yeah.
And Marvel keep nailing it on the head.
Yeah.
And this movie, I think they got it perfectly fine.
Like, they really did.
Wow.
Yeah. A note on the humor, like, you know, Marvel's also usually known for its more lighthearted movies. If we want to go towards the dark end, we usually go into like Christopher Nolan and the DC world and what they're currently doing. But overall, this might be or might have been or could be, I don't know what's going to come down the road, but the darkest, ominous, serious, grave toniest
before Doctor Strange and the movie.
I didn't know. I did not know Marvel can get that dark. And I was like, am I watching Marvel here? Am I watching
but
DC?
But even with that, it still managed to be a hilarious movie.
Exactly.
Great laughs.
Right.
And I mean, everyone, you know, like we were talking about the humor. Everyone knows that one meme where you got the two Spider-Men pointing at each other and then they added the third one.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, that's going to be what it's like with Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire.
And it really was, right?
They did it twice.
But they didn't do it exactly like they did it in the comics.
Right.
It was a lot more metaphorical in the sense of like when Ned was like, hey, Peter, and then like all three Peters are like,
what's up?
Peter Parker, Spider-Man, is that your
funniest movie moment?
Yeah, that's my funniest moment. The moment when they're busy discussing that. In fact, that whole scene with Ned, entire scene with Ned was just perfect. You know, Tobey Maguire is describing how his best friend tried to kill him, and then he died in his arms, and then
Andrew Garfield said his best friend also tried to kill him. And in the comics, Ned Leeds is actually a supervillain called the Hobgoblin.
Pepper's nodding, like obviously he knows this,
and obviously they're going to go that direction, right? Because he's opening portals.
I hope so. I think just to build off of him, I think the funniest moment wasn't exactly that with Ned. I mean, that was a hilarious moment, but I think the moment where the three of them are on the, you know, the Statue of Liberty / Statue of Captain America, and they're like literally, I don't want to say roasting, but they're like trying to get to know everyone and like understand like their differences, and in doing so they're like paying homage and like kind of roasting the funny, you know, wacky, zany moments of the last few, like with Electro. Like, how did he become like that? Oh, he fell into like a vat of eels. Oh, that does it to someone. Like, that does it to someone. Or like how Toby's the only one who for some reason able to like just shoot web out of him, and they're like, how do you do that? Does that come from your wrists?
And also that's disgusting.
Somewhere else.
And no one had a problem with that until you realize when Tom Holland's Spider-Man like hit the screen, and like, you know, memes became a lot more like the norm. People were looking at it and were like saying, okay, we've got a guy who shoots webs from an electronic wrist wristband. Now we've got a new guy who shoots from an electronic wristband. What about that OG guy at the beginning? Where does he produce that web stuff from?
Sam Raimi, he actually, in the comics, he does develop web shooters and like he does it mechanically. Mm-hmm. But Sam Raimi was like, nah, I don't think people will like get that he can actually do that because he's just a kid. So how would he be able to build that tech? So he's just like, you know what? I'll make it organic. It'll be fine.
Organic. It needed to be more organic back then. Back then, they didn't have like the MCU. Like people didn't understand all this crazy tech goes into superheroes. Exactly. They needed to be a bit more like, he's a superhero. He's got superpowers. He's a spider. All right. Spider shoot webs.
Mm-hmm. For me, it's more like the Los Angeles Spider-Man. You know, homegrown, organic. You know, 100% all natural.
Canadian.
I think Elektra sums it up by saying you should be careful where you fall to.
Yeah. Because Sandman was also explaining his origin story where he fell into a particle accelerator or something.
Yeah,
I don't
exactly.
Know. So moving from the...
Yours, by the way? What's yours?
Mine? It was also the...
Your opinion matters, Eliezer.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Just the banter between all three of them when they were discussing who they've fought in the past. Mm. And Tom Holland was like, well, I fought Thanos, and Tobey Maguire was like, well, I fought an alien, like a black goo alien, and Andrew Garfield was just like, I want to fight an alien. When's my alien?
Well, you know,
coming?
he might, but we'll get to that later on. Yeah. We'll
get to that later. So moving from most comedic, what was your guys' most heartfelt moment?
Ooh. All right, who wants to start? Mendel, you want to start this one?
I'm gonna be honest. I'm gonna go all the way to the end of the movie where
you're gonna take mine. I know that.
Yeah,
I was gonna take all of us.
Do it, please.
Okay, I was gonna go all the way to the end of the movie where Peter comes back into the store after the spell has been cast. No one remembers who he is, and he walks into the store and he's been rehearsing how he's gonna tell her that he is Peter Parker, her longtime friend, lover, Spider-Man. You know,
break
the whole news to her. And you feel like there should be more chemistry there, the way that she looks at him, and how he just doesn't go through it. He just doesn't go through with it. And one of the questions that an interviewer asked Tom Holland is that, listen, you know, Spider-Man's a smart guy. You know, he is MIT worthy. Like, he's not just a regular high schooler. Yeah. He's a very smart high schooler, and he wants to go to MIT. And he's basically given all of that up to pursue the Spider-Man, you know, persona. Mm-hmm. And we saw that with Tobey Maguire,
exactly,
with Andrew Garfield.
Right.
Andrew Garfield is like in the middle of it, but coming towards end stages.
Right.
Tobey Maguire has already overcome it, as he discussed how he managed to, like, you know, eventually develop a relationship.
Yeah.
Andrew Garfield's trying to get there too. And Tom Holland is stepping into that, the youngest of all the Spider-Men, and he is stepping onto that plate over there. I felt that was the most heartwarming.
Nice.
Because the two actors they date in real life.
Tom Holland
you know, like,
and Zendaya are currently in a couple.
They're in a relationship.
Allegedly.
And so, you know, like, okay, like off screen, like they're probably hugging and everything, but like they have to literally act like pretend they don't know each other.
Yeah. And it's kind of annoying. Yeah. My entire Instagram Reels feed is like Tom and Zendaya. I'm like, I just want to see Marvel snippets, not like a Hollywood like love story.
On the topics though, and I'm scared I'm going to take covers, but on the topic of the relationships.
Yeah.
I got to say the moment, and it was referenced in the trailer, when the scaffolding shakes on the Statue of Liberty, and Mary Jane MJ falls, and you see, you know, Peter jump
she's
off.
She's not Mary Jane, right?
She's not. She's Michelle Jones.
Yeah, she's
MJ,
Michelle Jones.
Right?
She's MJ, but she's Michelle Jones. Yeah.
you see him jump off, and then like it goes to title, and so we are like, oh, he's probably gonna catch her. And my original theory was like, I thought that they were gonna introduce the Spider-Man in the final battle. I didn't think we were gonna get them the entire movie, and I was like so like shocked like by how much time I had with Andrew again, because he's, you know. He's the best Spider-Man. I'm obsessed.
A bit controversial.
But, just fantastic actor. And then when Goblin comes out of nowhere
and just swipes him,
everyone in the theater like gasp, like, no! It's gonna happen again. And then you see Andrew's face, and even before he did it, everyone knew what was about to happen.
Yeah.
I can't stop. Like, this is like Endgame again, where like you have the reaction videos.
But you can't put it past Marvel to like make it in a way that he doesn't actually get to it in time.
But I'm saying, like, when Endgame released, I could not stop watching reaction videos to when all the, you know, superheroes came through the portals, or when Cap lifted the hammer and everyone in the theater was just going nuts and losing their shit. And all week, I just cannot stop watching the reaction where you see Andrew and Andrew jumps off and everyone in the theater is like, go!
Because it's like reliving a moment that you only live once again. Yeah.
It is.
It's literally like, I'm forgetting the English word, but it's chuba.
That's what it does.
It's
like he's the one, he catches her and then he's the one who's crying.
Yeah.
Like,
and
he
then
says,
MJ,
are you okay? And MJ's
like,
yeah.
Are
you?
Yeah.
And exactly. Everyone in the theater is feeling the same way. I mean, in our theater, people were going nuts. There's this group of girls sitting behind us and they could not stop crying from
the
entire
movie.
The entire movie, they were just bawling their eyes out, and we turn around and they like look at us apologetically, but like rightfully so. I mean, like,
but when that happened, everyone in the theater was like, go, let's go, yes, and people were losing it, and I just think like that was the most epic moment of the movie. But
it was the most epic, but you asked about emotionally moving,
that's true.
So there was actually a thing that connected me to, you know, like sad movies can connect you to sad points in your life.
Yeah.
And I used to think about that this specific Spider-Man, before losing Tony Stark, didn't really lose a family.
Mm.
And then
he lost Uncle Ben off
screen. But we don't see it on screen. And the moment with Aunt May.
It gets referenced in Civil War really for moving. A second, where he says, like, and then the bad things start to happen.
Right.
And the moment we actually see him understanding people can actually die. I mean, Tony Stark died, like, heroically while doing something,
like
knowingly he's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing he's going to die. And that moment where you can lose someone because of his actions. And I think they tied it really nicely, because she was the one asking him to pursue this line, this not letting them go and so on. So it, you could blame him, but also her for his action. But his direct actions led to her death, which is very dramatic if you think about it.
Let them go the way
Doctor Strange wanted, she would have lived.
But it's like you said in class, like this is the first time where he truly understands, like with great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah, and it's something that they explained to him as well, that that like the person, the antagonist that says that sentence generally has to end up dying. And that's in order for Spider-Man to realize like his, whoever he is, his greatest calling, which is to protect and do the best that he can in a righteous, good guy kind of way. But no, I just want to say, like, one of the things I want to just go back mentioning to, like, the audience reactions to things. I'm from a country where these movies, there's dead silence.
Right.
There's no cheering, there's no clapping, there's nothing like that. You watch in silence, you like your voice, your lips are sealed shut, and you're just like dying on the inside to like do something, but no one does.
It's like marriage, basically.
Here in Israel, they don't care at all.
No.
At all. I mean, like the movie comes on, the movie just starts and everyone's clapping and like screaming.
But it's worldwide now. I think that Marvel is slowly changing the theater experience. Like even when Star Wars came out and they brought back Star Wars, like the reactions in the theater were, okay, cool. Oh, Millennium Falcon. Oh, nice. People are losing it. Like they're watching, you know, Champions League, the final match of the season, and they cannot believe what's happening. And this is just, it's a movie.
Because they finally, like, these directors are giving the fans what they want.
Yeah, my wife thinks I'm a lunatic when she sees me, like, freaking out, like, watching.
It's like watching sports. It's like watching sports. Your team scores a goal. It's amazing. It's what you wanted. You got it. You cheer. Mm-hmm. And that's what people are feeling like in these movies.
Yeah, so as you guys know from previous episodes, I am a massive fan of Happy Hogan. Happy Hogan is just, he's a fan favorite. So for me, the most heartfelt, like, most emotional moment was... After towards the end of the movie, when Peter goes to the graveyard to pay homage to Aunt May, and Happy shows up, and Happy just says, "How'd you know her?" Because he doesn't remember who he is.
Yeah,
that broke me.
Wow. I just got chills. Happy. I just got chills down my back from you saying that.
Happy but folks. How did Happy know her, not knowing
through
who Spider-Man? But he doesn't know who Spider-Man is.
No, he doesn't. But he knows that Spider-Man is connected to Tony Stark. He just doesn't know the identity. The spell wasn't to forget that there was a Spider-Man. Mm. It's to forget that Peter Parker is Spider-Man.
Right. So he knew his personal... He knew his aunt, but not him?
Yeah. He knew Spider-Man
that Aunt May was connected to Spider-Man. And so from most heartfelt, let's go to the biggest... What the fuck moment? Where you were just like, can they do that? Is that a thing that they can do?
I mean, I think I kind of gave mine, but
everyone can agree on the same one. The biggest what the fuck moment is Ned opening the portal with the sling ring and him saying Peter, and then a figure coming towards the portal.
When I saw those eyes, I was like,
and then you could see the eyes. They're just like slightly too big for Tom Holland's Spider-Man. That was the biggest what the fuck moment. People knew it was coming, but didn't expect it to happen like that. It happened, and it
The way Garfield took off his hood, and he went like, right? He just like suddenly took it off. I feel like in his mind, he's like, okay, I could finally tell the truth. 3, 2, 1, boom!
After all the interviews, he had to like keep his face.
Yeah,
yeah. It was very funny how like when they interviewed the characters afterwards about that, how they couldn't. That was the most antagonizing thing for them. They couldn't even go to like the red carpet event.
Yeah.
So they couldn't go watch the movie like everyone else
because that
of the
would
surprise.
Give away that they
I don't
were
think
in it.
I don't think they're even allowed to get interviewed yet. Like I've not seen them on the late shows.
Okay, they are allowed to be interviewed now. I got that update like last night that they can be, and they've like released statements just about mostly like it was saying about how difficult it was.
I saw the statements.
But I'm looking forward to the interview.
Yeah, I want to see an interview like Jimmy Fallon with like all three Spider-Man, and they're be like, "What the heck, guys? We had you on the show."
Yeah. So, do you all agree that was...
I thought you were asking besides that, because that's...
Yeah, it's kind of a given. I feel like we just have to get that out of the way. Now that that's out the way, I think that the biggest WTF moments can be a little bit more accurately analyzed.
Yeah, for me, personally, it was when the spell was blown up, and like you see the purple like opens up and you see figures, and I saw so many. I'll name a few. Kraven the Hunter, mm-hmm. who's one of my favorite Spider-Man villains, just because he's so cool.
That was the dude with the spear.
Yeah,
he's gonna reference. He's coming Fur in. Coat. He's gonna be in future films.
Yeah, you see a Hopefully. Silhouette of the Rhino. You see the silhouette of Scorpion, and like, oh, I just want these characters so badly. So badly.
I mean, I kind of touched mine before because I think it's emotional, but at the same time, it's like, I can't believe it. Like, they finally gave him closure after years.
Mm-hmm.
After years of having, like, you know, to like live on that movie. Like, they never gave Andrew the third Spider-Man movie. Every Spider-Man has had a third Spider-Man movie except for him.
Well, and they gave him... change that now.
Yeah, now it's honestly the most trending thing on Twitter about Spider-Man.
So they were saying that actually before Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man, they're looking to do another Tobey Maguire Spider-Man.
Now it's trending hard. Andrew Garfield, Amazing Spider-Man 3 on Twitter.
Yeah.
On top of that, if you watch the Morbius trailer, it references Andrew's universe in the.
It references all of them.
It references Andrew's with Venom.
With the current Venom.
Yeah, it doesn't. I don't think it references
Maguire.
They're
not a guaranteed shared universe.
There's Tom Hardy's Venom. There's there's the Vulture from Tom Holland's universe. Mm-hmm.
There's the graffiti of Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man on the wall.
So, like, it references what could be any of them.
I think Sony's plan, honestly, this is my theory, is that... I think the deal they had with Marvel is like, let's introduce all three, and whoever trends the most after this, whoever we think we can make the most money with for another movie, that will be the Sony universe's Spider-Man. That will be who will go up against Venom. Yeah. And right now, Andrew Garfield is one who's trending because everyone's like, Toby got three, Andrew got two, and the second one ended really like with a major cliffhanger. Yeah. And so I think Toby's a bit old. To go up against a guy like, you know, Tom Hardy. I think Andrew and Tom Hardy can have, who are two of the best method actors. If anyone's ever watched Peaky Blinders, he's fantastic as Alfie Solomons, the Jewish mafia leader. And to see these two method actors going against one another could just be fantastic.
Yeah. But that's on like the scale of, you know, our what the fuck moments.
Yeah.
But we need to hear from our professor about that.
I think you've mentioned it accidentally. Like it's actually a post credit scene. It's seeing the black symbiotic gooey left there by Tom Hardy's character. I'm saying,
yes.
Can they really merge Sony's universe? Are they really about to do that? Which not necessarily they would, but seeing this black goo material left there, alien thing, made me feel, wow, everything is possible even when combining merch.
There's a quick theory now that's coming around that this might be the way that the MCU, who always like to do things with a little bit of a twist, a little bit of pizzazz, panache, introduces Miles Morales. Mm. Miles Morales, for those who don't know, is the African-American / I believe Latino Spider-Man. He has a black and red Spider-Man suit. Mm-hmm. He was the main character in Into the Spider-Verse. Great movie, recommend it. And, you know...
He's referencing Tom Holland.
Yeah, he's referencing it as well, but... It would be very interesting to see if the black suit that he wears isn't just a suit, but a symbiote.
I personally don't like that theory, but...
I don't like that theory,
we'll
either.
We'll see.
Now, a lot of the symbiote is explained in the games, the Spider-Man games.
Yeah.
Like, I've watched a couple of, like, the game's walkthroughs.
Mm-hmm.
And with the symbiote suit, there's two storylines. There's the movie storyline where it's just something he has to overcome in himself, you know, a flawed character trait, a flawed personality trait. Whereas in the game, it's something that, you know, originally takes over him, takes over his mind.
Right.
But then he gains control over it and he only uses it. It's in his body and it stays in his body, but he only uses it when he absolutely has to.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, we've already explored black suit Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire. Maybe they could add something new with Tom Holland.
Right. So what I think that they're going to, personally, for the MCU, what I think they're going to do is they're going to have, because we know that the symbiote knows who, like, he knows Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Like, through the hive mind across the multiverse, he knows Spider-Man is, like, his guy. So he's going to, that little goo, little piece of goo is going to attach itself to people, until it gets to Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And it might not attach to Spider-Man himself, but it usually attaches to Flash Thompson, who is a character in the MCU already, and he usually becomes Agent Venom, which will be because he's obsessed with Spider-Man and he wants to be Spider-Man, and so he will just he'll take the
Major fanboy
Agent Venom persona and do good things with it. I really hope that that's what they do.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, definitely.
That's an interesting, yeah.
Yeah. So, we all agree this movie was phenomenal.
Yes, 100%.
9.2 IMDb, come on.
9.2 IMDb. So,
10 on my rating.
I didn't even know that. Wow.
There's always room to improve. In your opinions, what was something that could have been done a little bit better?
Trevor, why don't you start off? Why don't you start us off?
Wow, I need to think about this one.
So I'll take the reins. Yeah,
batter up.
A lot of people have been who've been reviewing the movie have said that yes, the second and third acts are just completely phenomenal, beautifully done, but they went into the movie with an end and a middle, but not a beginning. Mm. So with just like a little. It seemed a little bit lazy.
Interesting.
The beginning seemed a tiny bit lazy, and just like they needed the characters to get to some point. So what's the quickest way we can get them there so that we can spend more time on the fun stuff? Mm-hmm. So the whole like Doctor Strange not explaining the spell and saying like, is there anyone that you do want to know, or why didn't you email them? Why didn't you call them in the first place? So, like, little stuff like that, like the lazy writing.
Why not use a spell to make Thanos forget that he wanted to collect Infinity Stones in the first place? Yeah. Thanos doesn't know what Infinity Stones are with that spell.
Also, suddenly, like, his, you know...
Needs a bit more explanation.
Accusations that he's facing against murder are dropped. Yeah. And I think a lot of people would have a lot more questions about, like, how quickly they're dropped if the lawyer wasn't a sick cameo. I think they kind of used his cameo to cover up a major plot hole, right? For those who don't know, Matthew Murdock, Daredevil, ends up being Peter Parker's attorney, and he basically comes in and
catches that brick. Yeah, so it's like a dead giveaway that that's
what
him.
Is the plot hole?
In like a minute and a half, basically, Matthew Murdock's just sitting at the table. He's like, "All right, Peter, I've managed to get your charges dropped. The charges that Mysterio had planted, and he said I had contingencies, that whole thing, it just suddenly got dropped." And so, you know, there obviously were repercussions which lead into like the second and third acts of the movie, but that major legal side slash, you know, facing the public was just dropped in like a minute and a half. And I was a bit like, oh, that's quick. But it's pretty cool that Daredevil's here. Yeah. And like, I think that kind of covered it up.
Yeah. Now, I think that one of the most important things, like maybe to stray a bit from the idea of something to improve, but I think something that I enjoyed more in the beginning, I'll defend the beginning, you can attack it, is the whole modern day concept of, you know, you're either on the right side, the left side, the good side, the bad side.
Yeah.
In my opinion, the good side. In your opinion, the good side. You know, everyone's one against the other.
Right.
About how people are for Spider-Man killing Mysterio, anti-Spider-Man killing Mysterio, saying, who are you? You need to be held accountable. No, he's fine. He's a superhero. And you've got two people on either side, like, really going at it with that. And I feel like, you know, you see it a lot more in movies in today's day and age.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they do it very well in Hollywood now, is that they're not making their own political stance on it. They're being satirical about it. They're saying, you guys are all being dumb. You know, this is a Spider-Man movie about Spider-Man. Forget the right, forget the left, forget your arguing. That's not the main point. The main point is we got a guy who shoots webs and swings from building to building.
Right.
So that's what you like. That's not.
That's what I like. Yeah. Oh, okay. It takes it away. It takes it away from that that stereotype of, you know, you have to have an opinion. I feel like in the world today, you're required to have your own opinion. It's like, it's not a right to your own idea, a right to your own expression. It's something where you're like, oh my God, you don't have your own expression.
They
push you towards
an opinion even if you don't have one.
And if you don't have one, you haven't formulated one, we're going to make you pick and choose. And I feel like that in the movie, they gave a pretty strong message towards that. Like, it doesn't matter. Just, it's a movie about a guy who swings from buildings.
Yeah. So this leads me, I think you actually said it, that the thing that a bit bothered me is the simplicity by which Doctor Strange obliged to Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I mean, you can change the whole world. You're going to hypnotize like billions of people because he is not getting to MIT. Come on, I mean, I know it's a movie, but I need to, usually Marvel was known for, even in Iron Man, I like it, especially when the tech was, of course, far-fetched, but a bit connected to reality. You know, there was something there about the radioactive material, about a new element he created, and they talked about the atoms and the electrons. I know, knowing chemistry, I know that it was a bit accurate, you know, like there was not really such an element, and they did their background search. Why would doctors and even Wang saying, hey, come on, don't do that, and then he's going to fight Abomination, so he's off, and he moves and says, okay, so do it, and I don't want to be a part of it. Come on, you're going to ruin the entire planet, but I don't want to be a part of it.
So you said that, like, you're familiar with chemistry, but you are a maths professor. So
the big question
is, in the movie, Doctor Strange tries to trap Peter,
the geometry thing.
He tries to trap him in the mirror dimension,
and
Peter Parker uses math to trap
if
Dr.
I'm not
Strange
mistaken
there.
It's called the Archimedean spiral.
I have to tell you, they're using a bunch of terms there in a non-correlated way whatsoever.
That's exactly what I was doing. I was super interested in that. I'm like saying, like, okay, I know the Archimedean corkscrew. I learned about that from actually a theme park that I went to in South Africa.
Wow.
Okay. They used it as like a water turbine so that they can bring these tubes from this like wet water ride. They could bring the tubes like back up to like a level where you load on there, and like the way that the screws work, I'm like, it doesn't make sense to me why they're there like that. And someone explained to me the concept of like the Archimedean corkscrew basically pushing water up. And so I looked into this because I was like very like, oh my word, they probably have like the math down and like, you know, sorted. Someone did their research and stuff like that about the mirror dimension. When Spider-Man's swinging through and he's talking about the math, he's literally
pi
just
r
saying,
squared, just giving the area just, of a circle. You know?
He's literally just giving the formula for working out the Archimedean spiral. Just the formula. He's just saying what it is. He's not like going through it. He's saying that's the formula.
So was there any legitimacy to like what was going on
there?
I'm
not the one to say because my knowledge there is like
common. But when you're sitting in a theater, was a part of you like pi divided by e?
No, it was the part of me that said that they're just throwing at me anything they know connected to geometry, so I'll buy the fact that he can outwin.
I just have to show you this knowledge. There's this meme I saw on Instagram. It's the scene from Avengers 1 where Loki is in Stark Tower and he's like, you know, I have an army, and Tony's like, well, we have a Hulk,
and he throws him on the floor.
So it's the discussion. So the guy goes, you know,
so Doctor Strange says, I have a mirror dimension.
And Tony, in this case, being Spider-Man, is like, well, I have not geometry, bitch.
Yeah. So
it's a nice concept, though.
Yeah. So like, okay, so I'll just give you like a bit of background because I really wanted to get into this. It really intrigued me. The way that the mirror dimension works as a theory. Mm-hmm. What is the mirror dimension?
It's a dimension outside of our plane that we can tamper in and not.
Wizards, magic users, and everyone who, you know, is related to the Doctor Strange arc of Marvel uses that area to train because they could do whatever they want there without consequences. It doesn't affect it. And for those of you asking questions, oh, how did Thanos destroy it? No, Thanos destroyed a gateway into the thing. He didn't actually destroy anything of the mirror dimension. So what is the mirror dimension in relation to our dimension?
Dark matter?
You know, the current thing. It's not dark matter. It's just a theory of something always being there, moving along with us. If you take two objects, you're moving along in space together, side by side. It's something that's always there, even if you don't know it's present. Mm-hmm. That's what the mirror dimension is. It's right there with us at any location that we want to go to, or anywhere we want to be. It's not saying that dimension is the same size as our universe. It's actually very small.
Right.
It's not the same size as our universe. But for some reason, no matter where you are, you always have access to it.
Can the Scarlet Witch go there?
The Scarlet Witch, she probably could have access to it if she wanted to.
I think we'll find out in the next
We did find out that you do need a sling ring to get there, but there are other magics that you can use instead of a sling ring.
Right.
So the theory of the mirror dimension being wherever you are and you current being the epicenter of this reality brings in the whole concept of the Archimedean spiral, the math that makes up the mirror dimension. If the mirror dimension is built on the theory that it moves along with you everywhere you go, it moves along the theory of the Archimedean spiral, where the core, the epicenter of the Archimedean spiral, is the thing that's moving. Mm-hmm. Not the actual circle of the spiral, but the core is the thing that's moving.
Fascinating.
And you could see it makes that shape. Once Doctor Strange is caught up in all those webs, you can see that it makes the perfect shape of the Archimedean spiral, and you get all happy about it.
I don't know why, but it always reminds me of the mirror dimension, Christopher Nolan's Inception. I always I'm going into Inception for a minute, the building collapses, and then I'm going back.
100%.
Which reminds me, by the way, another very nice moment in Spider-Man when only Spider-Man has managed to evade Doctor Strange or the Sorcerer Supreme's pushing him out of the body thing, but still be able to move his body.
Yeah,
when not there. That's his spidey thing.
It's a spider sense. And you actually, in the comics and in the animated movies and TV shows, there's little squiggly lines that go out of his head whenever it senses. And they haven't been able to do that in live action because how do you do that? But once he was pushed into his astral plane, you see his spidey sense do little squiggly lines in the swampiness of the
astrophysicism.
It also it
connects his physical body.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I liked it a lot.
It answers a very heated debate about where and what the spidey sense is. Is it something conscious that's in his brain, or is it something subconscious that's built in and hardwired to his body?
So that answers that it is subconscious.
It's very subconscious. It's something that's built into his body. It's the same reason why he could be focused on having a conversation with anyone. Someone could shoot at his leg, and without him even realizing, his leg's out the way. You know, it's just something that it's part of his inherent superpower. And it's actually, funnily enough, one of the things that Matt Murdock, Daredevil, and Spider-Man, it's one of the things that they bond over, but also struggle to bond over, because Matt Murdock's heightened blind guy senses can't pick up Spider-Man. Can't pick up Spider-Man's movements and predict them, and Spider-Man's spidey senses can't pick up Daredevil's, his silent assassin-ness.
What was the Kingpin, you think, in this on cinema? We did see him on Hawkeye, obviously.
So they mentioned the tie-in between Hawkeye and this is the musical. The musical of Rogers, the musical. That's the tie-in. You see a poster of it during the Spider-Man movie. You have that whole shablam and the end credits.
Yeah.
And so you know that it happens around Christmas.
She mentions Yelena when she comes in. She's like, "Oh, I need to see your new Liberty."
The new Statue of Liberty.
The new Statue of Liberty,
exactly.
With the shield.
Yeah.
And we also do see, I discussed this with Eliezer, Spider-Man swinging through Rockefeller Center and you seeing the tree. Timeline, we just worked out that it was a couple days before battle of Hawkeye.
Right, so the final moments of Spider-Man No Way Home occur in the beginning of...
beginning or midway.
Or midway through Hawkeye, because we see the tree still standing, but and they reference the new and improved Statue of Liberty, not the fact that it was destroyed. Mm. So to bring this episode to a close, what do you guys think is the best thing coming forward? For the MCU, for Spider-Man,
a few quick words.
A few quick words.
Oh, best thing forward. Come back to me. Come back to me. Come back to me.
I'm also going to pause. I want to hear what Trevor has to say.
On the total MCU, on Spider-Man specifically?
Either one.
So we could go with Sony or MCU, like Disney Plus MCU.
Yeah.
I think the greatest challenge now is to reinvent the characters, because we've lost most of our popular characters. And the Eternals are probably going to be there with, I know, a pop star next to them.
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah.
So I think they need to reinvent themselves. So I think we're looking forward to seeing a whole bunch of new characters and a totally new mix. And hopefully the way that looks now, it's going to connect us, but in a different way. There's no Iron Man and Captain America duo, we always wanted.
Yeah, that we grew up with.
I think I got to say that for me, just quickly, I think it's just whoever they decide to pair up Deadpool with in that first Deadpool movie. I'm starting to get a good vibe. It could be maybe Daredevil. I feel like that might be a great entry for him come in. I feel like they might have some fun banter. I feel like just seeing the scale of what they can do with Ryan Reynolds now in that universe as
I've 100%. Totally forgot about Deadpool.
Yeah,
Everyone did, especially because he's got he's the bridge between normal MCU Sony Pictures and
X-Men.
And X-Men, yeah. Which would be exciting.
Plus, he's the only one breaking the fourth wall. Yeah.
Right, so he'd be the perfect one to do
and
it.
And him and Tom Holland would also be hilarious. Oh. He would be like messing with Tom as a boy, with anyone.
Even him and Andrew Garfield. Mm-hmm.
Yes. I like that one better. Yeah.
Okay, so my theory over here is that we've now got the multiverse, right?
Yeah.
So Iron Man's not dead. It's a multiverse full of Iron Man.
Oh, amazing.
There is a multiverse full of Captain Americas. There is a multiverse full of all these characters. So someone, I can't remember who it was, interviewed Robert Downey Jr. and said, are you done? Is this it? Like, are you never coming back? Is Iron Man done for good? And like you saw, like he gave like a bit of a, well, we don't know. We don't know that yet. It looks like Robert Downey Jr. might be done. But Iron Man as a character might not be done. We've got...
That's an amazing thought. So, by the way, pop quiz. Who said to who, if I hear one more pop culture reference of you...
Tony Stark to
Tom Holland.
Peter Parker in space. Civil War. Oh, no, in Infinity War.
Space. Is that like a plus 5% on an exam?
So for me, it was seeing all those potential characters in the sky. And like, you guys heard me in the theater. I was just like, please be mutants, please be mutants. Sadly, they weren't, but... You know, just the possibility of them coming in and the multiverse breaking down. They have so many places to go now. It's
They do. They've got, don't forget, they've got with Eternals and with Shang-Chi, with Where the Rings Come From, and even Multiverse Madness with Doctor Strange. They're going to be introducing some, I don't remember what they're called, but these guys are like essential universal bad guys.
The Celestials, yeah.
Celestial bad guys. Like, these are guys who are at the peak of existence. We're talking Galactus, Shimogorath, you know, these big boy characters. And I feel like that has the potential to introduce so much to this.
Yeah, hopefully it'll, you know, become, it'll turn into more and more years, many more years of you know, freaking out in the movie theaters together, you know, and having those amazing reactions and revolutionizing the way that we see cinema and the way that we see film.
So this has been Real Life. That is R-E-E-L Life. Because we're a movie and TV podcast. Now,
that is true.
You can let us know what you thought of Spider-Man No Way Home and what you thought of any other movies beforehand on our Twitter at uppercase R-E-E-L _ L-I-F-E _ that is Real _ Life _ and on Instagram at R-E-E-L L-I-F-E P-O-D-C-A-S-T that is Real Life Podcast. No uppercases, no underscores, no nothing.
No nothing.
No nothing.
No nothing.
All right. Thank you so much for coming, Trevor.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. All right. Have a good day, everyone.